Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Hi everybody, welcome to SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. It's the 24th of February 2013, it's 17 minutes past one on Sunday afternoon here in Gosport, on the south of the UK. As you know, my name's Rob from robnunphoto.com, and this is my little audio diary about my journey through the wonderful world of photography. I hope everybody's had a fabulous week. I've been off work for the week, just using up some holiday, and it's also been Oliver's half term, so that's been good fun. We got up to a few things, and what I'm going to talk about this week are some videos I've been recording to for YouTube, and I'll put the links on the website so you can go over and check them out before I put them into the blog. And a trip to a indoor skate park that Oliver and I went to with a load of his mates, which kind of provided some technical challenges that I thought I'd talk to you about as well. So, here we go. So, what have I been doing? Well, you know, it's been freezing here in the UK, literally. Now, I know everybody, like, lives in really cold places, you know, like Canada and the north of the States and Russia, where, you know, you guys have proper snow. I mean, we don't really get that here, but it's been cold. The wind chill has been cold. The water's been in the ponds has been freezing and stuff. So, been out and about taking some photos, but really this week I've been concentrating on catching up with housework and recording some videos of stuff, and kind of really trying to improve the quality of the videos I do, which I think I have with the last one I did. It kind of got a bit better, so I can work on that over the next year. But let's get cracking. So the first thing I did a video on was the ring flash, the LED light. I think I talked about this a few weeks ago, picked it up from the car boot from those Chinese guys. And since, I've had a good opportunity to play around with it. And if you can't remember, or you didn't listen to that particular episode, the ring flash is a... I've got to stop calling it a flash, actually. This is not. It's a ring light. It's an array of 48 LEDs in a ring, which you fix to the end of your lens. And it comes with these adapters. You can just slide it on. And then it has a AA power pack, or you can plug it into the mains. And then it gives you continuous light. The reason why I bought it is because ring lights, or ring flash, it's proper ring flashes, are quite exciting when it comes to portrait photography. They give you this shadowless look that's very hip, if you like, very flattering. And yeah, it's something cool to play around with. Plus, the idea, if you've got a ring light, is it's a very small setup. You know, you don't have to bother with lots of other lights and umbrellas and stuff if you're using a ring light. You can basically use the ring light as your main, and you're not really worrying about fill. The only other things you might really worry about are maybe a background light for separation, or maybe a hair light, maybe stuff like that, but not much else. So I was intrigued with the concept. Real ring flashes are very expensive, and even the adapters you get, like the Orbis ring flash, and what they do, they're basically big lumps of plastic that you shove your flash into. They're quite expensive as well. There's some cheaper ones that fix onto your flash and go around. Maybe I'll investigate those next. But anyway, back to the 48 LED ring flash. My conclusions, really, after using it for doing a little bit of portrait work and a little bit of macro work, is it's not bright enough to be a main light without a tripod or running your camera at very high ISOs. So if we start off with macro photography, ring light's very useful because it gives you the ability to shoot without many shadows. and get that light right close to your subjects. And for that, it didn't give enough light in a dark environment to enable me to handhold and do macro photography with something like the 135mm Helios lens that I have with the extension tubes that I mainly use for macro, or the Soligor 90-210 zoom, again these M42 manual focus lenses that I use with extension tubes and adapter in my 350D. It didn't push that shutter speed fast enough. It was too slow. I'd get too much subject blur, and as you well know, when you're shooting macro photography, especially with extension tubes, your depth of field is very, very small indeed, so that's challenging in the first place. So you had to definitely use it with a tripod. Saying that though, the big advantage of having the ring light was that it made it a lot easier to focus using the tripod, and even though I was using manual focus lenses, old M42 ones with an EF to M42 adapter for my Canon 350D, I'd imagine the ring light, something like the 48 LED ring light, would help an awful lot with the autofocus on normal macro lenses as well. The only issue about that though is that as you start to move away from your subject and the ring flash isn't the main light, is you could then get a clash of different white balances from different sources, and I'm not quite sure how white the 48 LED ring flash was. I think it tended slightly towards blue. I could be wrong, but that's what I tend to think. So there, though, after doing the macro, and sort of the summary was you still got to use a tripod. I then tried to do a little bit of portrait photography with Oliver. And what I found was really, if you want to use one of these LED lights for portrait photography, again, they're not really bright enough. I had to use a 50, like 1.8, and a maximum of about f2.2. And get quite close for it to be able to get that shutter speed up. It might work quite nicely as a fill, you know, where the main light is really the sun, but again, you get the problem there of competing different white balances. I did get probably one good shot. If you want to use something like this as a portrait lens, again, you would probably be working on a tripod. Your subject would have to be still. And or you're best shooting in burst mode, so you're firing a number of shots off at once, so that you're going to get at least one that might be sharp. A little bit disappointed. I think I was probably expecting too much out of an LED ring flash, but I'm glad I've got it, and I will be using it for macro. And when the spring comes and the summer comes and we have the flowers outside, I will try and use it handheld and use it as a combination, you know. So I've got the sun illuminating my subjects, and then the ring flash on the end of my lenses as well. So watch this space, but definitely now I'm on the market for either something like an Orbis ring flash. I'm going to make a DIY one of my own, or one of those other type of ring flash adapters where your flash is on the top of your camera and it comes round and goes round your lens. There we go. Another video review I did was of something called the WatchBot. If you want more details, go to watch-bot.co.uk. That's watch-bot.co.uk. And it's an IP video camera. So what that means is it's a little kind of surveillance camera or baby monitor camera, if you like to give it a more friendly name, that you can sit anywhere in your house or business, I guess. It will connect to the wireless network, and then you can then access it via any device that can connect to the internet anywhere. And the watchbot.co.uk sent me one to have a play around with, and very impressive it is indeed. You know, I can be at work, log on to the camera on my Android phone using there's free apps you can get, and then I can control that camera and make it turn left, right, up, down, record video. If you're using Internet Explorer, you can talk through the camera as well, and if you attach, you can listen, and if you attach a speaker to the camera, you can then talk through the camera as well. So that would be quite cool if it's a baby camera. Very nice bit of kit. If it's the sort of thing you're interested in, I know it's kind of a little bit of a side issue to photography, but you know, as I say, check it out at watchbot.co.uk. That's watch-bot.co.uk. I'll put notes in the put links in the show notes over robnonphoto.com/show215. However, I have got a code, they'll give you one for half price. They're normally 200 quid, and you get it for 100 quid. I'm not sure how long the code's going to last for, but the code is WB730785. That's WB730785. Pretty sure that'll only work in the UK with watchbot.co.uk. Very interesting. Another video review I did was of a little sports or helmet or bike video camera I got. Again, I think I talked about this a few weeks ago. Again, off the same Chinese guys from the Caruso. And it's a, looks like a little two-cell Maglite, you know, black video camera. You see them on eBay. If you look up helmet video camera, you'll see them. And they're pretty cheap. This one cost me a tenner. And originally I got it so that I could put it underneath the quadricopter, remote control quadricopter. We got that before Christmas. But in reality, it was a little bit too heavy, and the quadricopter couldn't take off. So I'm going to get a different one, one of those little plastic clip-on cameras. However, I actually gave this one a bit of a test by attaching it to my bike and going for a ride around Gosport, which was quite cool. And the quality is okay. It doesn't have much of a dynamic range. So, you know, if it's a very sunny day, you tend to be able to see the road, you know, and the houses, but the sky blows out, or the sky goes into nice colours, but then everything else becomes dark. So, you know, it's not a high definition camera by any means, but I was quite impressed with it. And I think I might use it, you know, I think I might use it for something like a series of videos, you know, when I go on photo walks around Gosport or somewhere, I could kind of use that as my go-to if, when I'm on a bicycle, just fix it onto the bike, or even the car actually, as I'm driving around, it kind of gives you bits. I mean, I don't know, it depends if you find it interesting or not. I find it quite interesting watching these things, but yeah, it's a bit different when it's, you've got me puffing and panting on a bicycle, riding along. It's much better when it tends to be like a motocross bike, a track, sort of jumping 50 feet in the air. But anyway, you can check that out over on the my YouTube channel, and again, I'll put that over, put links over on romanoffroad.com. Now, the final thing I did a video about, actually, it's not the final, I did another one as well, but I won't talk about that. I might as well. If you're in the UK, Gumtree, check it out. It's an app. They're, unlike eBay, they're not auctions. They're classifieds that people post, and it's very local. You tend to have to pick the stuff up. So you look in like Hampshire, or you look in Portsmouth, or you look in Western Six. And there's loads of photographic bargains on there. And a bargain I picked up was a new zoom lens. And I picked up a Canon EF 100-300 f5.6 fixed aperture push-pull zoom lens, which is one of the very first zoom lenses for the EF system. When Canon dropped the FD manual focus system, went over to the autofocus system, they changed the mount, as you well know, and had therefore brought out a whole new range of lenses. And the beauty is these EF lenses are compatible with all the digital cameras, all the Canon digital cameras, digital SLRs, that have come out ever since. There's quite a lot of these old lenses around. And as you know, I've got a 55-250 telephoto zoom, which I think is a brilliant lens. It's image stabilised, it's sharp, it's great for portraits, it's great for lots of things. But the problem with it is it's an EFS lens, to use the Canon nomenclature, which is great. And the EFS lenses were designed to be lighter and cheaper, and designed specifically for the smaller sensors in APS size C, as it sensors in consumer grade SLRs. But the problem with that is that the EFS lenses tend not to fit the teleconverters you can get. And if you cash your mind back months and months, you'll remember I picked up a Jessop's Canon 2x teleconverter from the car boot for a fiver. And I've been itching to have a play with this. And I've done a few little things with it, using it as a almost like an extension tube to improve the macro capability of lenses, but doesn't really do much. So it's really to get you out there. As I say, these things only fit the EF lenses. So I really wanted an EF lens to have a play around with it, to see how good it was, and to get me out to these big, long focal lengths. Because, you know, I'm a skint photographer. I don't have much money to spend on photography. All my kit is, or most of it is second hand. and I'm not going to be able to afford a 600mm lens anytime soon, if ever. But, you know, if I could get hold of a cheaper 300mm, and I was thinking about the 75-300mm, then happy day. So I saw this 100-300 for sale for £40 on Gumtree in Southampton. So I gave him a ring, and that was quite cheap. Normally they're about 70 to 120. Gave him a ring, went down there, grabbed it off him, looked in good condition, a little bit dusty, had a circular polarising filter on the end of it, so I couldn't see the glass, but I guess it was probably okay. And took it home, cleaned it up a bit, couldn't get the circular polarising filter off the filter thread on the front, so I had to use the old elastic band trick to really grip it, and that popped it off, and found the front element is sparklingly clean. Held it up to the light, again a few dust marks but no scratches or anything. Lovely lens, very good condition, and it's got a bit of lens creep. The problem with these push-pull type zooms is that instead of turning the barrel to make it focus, you push and pull it backwards and forwards, and after a while, they might have been like this since new actually, the lens slides up and down. So you can imagine you're pointing the camera up at a bird and you zoom in on it and let go of the lens then slides back down and zooms out again. Bit of a pain that, but to get around that you use a elastic band around it. That doesn't really help it when you're pointing the camera down, but generally if you're pointing it down you're probably zoomed in because you want to use trying to attempt a little bit of macro. And the kind of conclusions I came from the testing, and for the testing I went round Fort Brockhurst and did various shots of birds at 300mm, different apertures. Then I went on a very cold morning down to Gosport, the Portsmouth Harbour, and took some pictures of Spinnaker Tower. The conclusion I came to was that the lens performs better at f8 than it does at 5.6. It gets sharper. But one of the main disadvantages is its slowness. You know, the fact that even, you know, f5.6 is quite slow at 300mm if you're trying to go handheld and if you're trying to track moving subjects, because the autofocus is a bit slow as well. If you're taking photos of static objects like buildings or animals that aren't moving very fast on a tripod, then that aperture doesn't matter because you're not going to get camera shake. You might get subject movement, but you're not going to get camera shake if you're on a tripod. And I tested it with a Jessop's 2x teleconverter, and I'm pleased to say, at f8, the images were reasonably sharp, I would say. Not brilliant, but not crap. Not as bad as using some of the M42 lenses I've got, the long ones with teleconverters, because they kind of, I think they lose the ability to focus to infinity. You know, not brilliant by any means, it's not an L-class lens, and I'm using a cheap Jessop's teleconverter, but all right. And I think on a sunny day, using this lens at 300, at something like f8 or f11 with the teleconverter, should take some very nice zoom pictures. So you know, keep your eye. If you do see one of these old push-pull zooms, or like the 75-300, because I used to have one of those as well, if you can get it for a bargain and you want a long lens to use with the teleconverter, because you've got EFS lenses, then I'd say dig in. One thing I did notice, however, and this isn't nothing to do with the lens, was that because I was shooting at like f11 and f22, just looking at different apertures, how dirty my sensor is on my camera. My God, you won't believe it. It's like I've spat underneath the mirror. It's just covered in blotches. So I think what I'm going to be doing this week is emailing a few companies that sell sensor cleaning kits and see if they can send me something to review, because I tried to give it a quick kind of blow off with my little blower and that didn't really do anything, and then I rather foolishly decided to rub it with one of my lens cleaning cloths, and I think I put a few more marks on it rather than took anything off. So watch this space. If anybody's got any recommendations for lens cleaning kits, I'd email me scalespeeder@gmail.com. That would be very good indeed. So there we go, there's a number of YouTube videos I recorded this week, and what I tend to do is record the video, upload it onto YouTube, and then over the next several weeks I'll then add reviews onto the blog using the video as like a header, and then I'll put example images below and expand on the review with words underneath, with like an essay underneath. So watch out for those over on robnumfer.com. Right, quick drink of orange juice. Right. Okay, so Prevail Skate Park. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can go and have a look at it in Poole. Oliver wanted to go down there with his friends, and a load of them went in one car, and him and one of his mates came in little Heinz, put a bike carrying back, and went down there. And it's an indoor skate park, you know, with loads of wooden ramps and a foam pit and all this sort of stuff. Great fun for the guys, and they absolutely loved it, riding around. We were there for 6 hours. It was absolutely freezing cold, but luckily I'd wrapped up pretty warm. So anyway, I find out, you know, I suggested we were going to go a couple of days before, and I thought, right, what gear am I going to take? Because I rang them up and said, you know, what's it like? And they said, well, there's a viewing platform where you can sit. And I thought, right, so it's going to be above. And so I thought, oh. I started off, I thought I'd just take, you know, my basic camera kit with my camera and the 18-55 and 55-250. And then I started thinking about it. I thought, well, no, it's probably going to be quite dark inside, isn't it? So I better take the 50-1.8 as well. So I've got a big aperture for working light. Then I thought, well, to be honest, you know, the 51.8, although it's a nice portrait lens, it hasn't got much length. And because of the small depth of field when you're shooting at, like, 1.8, with a moving subject, even using something like continuous autofocus, it's going to be a bit of a challenge. So why don't I take my flash as well? I kind of decided on the 565EX Yongnuo flash, because that's the only one I've got that is fully automatic, and it's pretty powerful as well. I didn't know how powerful it was until we took it and played with it, but I'll come on to that in a minute. So I thought, I'll do all this, and then I thought, maybe I'll get an opportunity to go wireless as well. So I took like a wireless trigger. And anyway, so we went, got there, and so if you can imagine it like the inside of a big warehouse, with at one end of it like a raised platform where you can sit down and basically parents can watch, and you've got all these wooden ramps inside. If you've ever played like Tony Hawk's, you know, one of those skate parks inside, and they're all doing their jumps and their manuals and going up and down over the tabletops and having fun. So, first thing I thought, oh, it's pretty dark in here. They had quite a few lights and a few skylights, but it was a dim day outside. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a bit of a challenge. You know, when you know, it's, although it's light enough for the guys on the bikes and the skateboards and the scooters, it's, you think, this is a bit dim in here. So I whacked on the 50, and I was like having a go at 1.8 and 2.2, and the shutter speed was still, you know, pushing it like 100. 1/125th of a second, which for moving subjects like kids on BMXs isn't really fast enough. And I started pushing up the ISO, but again with the 50 I didn't really have the range that I wanted, so I took a load of shots just to see, you know, as you do, did a bit of panning on all this sort of stuff. And as you know, one of the things I kind of believe in is the fact that you don't always know what you've got till you get home. You can look at stuff on a big screen, especially with my 350D, where the LCD screen on the back is the side of a postage stamp. It's very, very small indeed. So I shot with the 50 for a while. Then I thought, right, let's get the YN565EX flash out and the 55-250. And I got to tell you, amazing, absolutely amazing. I had, even though I've watched like the Strobis videos where he's using flashes to light up a basketball court, you know, too, I didn't realise how powerful these flashes are. For the majority of time I used it in ETTL mode, so I was just in aperture priority. I was shooting at like 5.6 or 8 to get a little bit more sharpness out of the lens and get a bit depth of field, and just let the flash do its business. And what I found was, for subjects that were further away, and we're talking like 100 feet away, I had to push the use flash exposure compensation, so the flash was pushing out a little bit more power. And also I found that because obviously the BMXs are going up and down, I don't always know what they're going to be doing, I wanted to be able to fire reasonably quickly as well. I didn't have to wait for the recycling time of the batteries to charge up the capacitor, or however they work these days. I was pushing my ISO up as well, so the flash didn't have to work quite as hard, so I was running like ISO 400, 800 and a lot of the time 1600 as well. And it was pretty good, and so I'd taken lots of photos. The big problem I had though was my vantage point up on this platform, because I couldn't... If you ever want to exaggerate how high somebody goes to jump or something like that, what you do is you get a wide-angle lens, you get down really low, and you shoot them from below. But I couldn't do that, which was a shame. But, I took lots of photos, and for a while as well, I played around with it on manual mode and was, like, putting the flash onto full and half power. And I tell you what, even at half power, when I was shooting at ISO 800, that thing, that one flash, could light up, you know, a massive part of the skate park. And in fact, several times, Oliver came over and said, look, you couldn't turn your flash down, can you? And talking to the boys afterwards, they said, that flash in your camera was well bright. You know, it was bang, going off like a frame photo. Nobody else complained, but it, you know, it really was very, very bright. So I was very, very impressed indeed. Now, I know with the Yongle flashes, they're not exactly famed for their longevity. And I imagine if I'd been firing it off at full power all day, it would have overheated probably quite quickly and not lasted that long. But, you know, my faith in the Yongle brand for those things was very, very good indeed. And actually, talking to the guys in the skate park afterwards, what I could have actually done was gone and see them, got a reflective jacket, and then you can go out onto the floor and then take some shots. So I might do that next time, you know, wear some jogging bottoms and some trainers and then do that and go out and get right in the action. The other problem though as well is when the kids and Oliver are kind of cycling up and down doing their things, you don't know what they're going to do because it's really noisy in there. They've got music blaring, you know, you've just got to kind of guess, alright, he's going to, you know, try and jump the tabletop now, or he's going to do the foam pit, or he's going to do a manual, or ride backwards, or this bit. But you kind of guess it all the time. And I guess when I'm down on the floor, what I'll have to do is I say, right, I'm going to sit here by this ramp, you keep coming this way and keep doing stunts so I know where you're going to be. Because when I was up on this platform, I would run down to one end because I think they were going to do something, and they'd just stop, start chatting for 5 minutes, and I'd be like, you go do something, and then they'd be like, no, we're busy. And then I would sort of put the camera down, and they'd have whizzed off to the other end, and they'd be jumping into the foam pit trying to do flips and things. So, but it was great fun, really, really good fun. But I'm looking forward to next time going and being able to get actually onto the floor of the skate park and doing some setups, using the flash again, but using it with like the 18-55 to get some really nice wide angle shots as well. Right, there we go, that's it for this week. Back to work tomorrow. So as you know, when I'm back to work, it means very, very busy. So I don't know when the next podcast will be, probably in 2 weeks time. That tends to be quite a nice rhythm for me. 2 weeks gives me enough time to record stuff and do it that way. Thanks everybody for taking part in the Flickr group and submitting work to the two photo assignments we've got left. There's still about a week left. I've actually put some in now, and one of the assignments is on symmetry and one of them is on low key. So you've got enough time, stick a couple of images in there. If not, put them in the group anyway. Remember, it's free to join. Thanks everybody for going over and looking at robinofphoto.com. Thanks everybody for commenting on the videos on YouTube, and especially thanks everybody who's gone over to iTunes and done a review or added some stars onto the podcast. I know that really helps a lot in getting new subscribers. But most of all, thanks to you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from RobinOnPhoto.com. You can email me, scalesweet@gmail.com. But hopefully, pretty soon, I'll see you on Flickr.